Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
So I reviewed the Tina Turner documentary. It's called Tina. I gave it a great review, and then I watched it again last night. And, man, it is such a good documentary, such a great documentary on her life, what she describes as a very sad life, that she's had a very sad life. She said there's no other way to put it because of the torture that she endured from Ike Turner and her lifelong search for love and happiness in her life. In many ways, really, it's kind of sad that although she gave pleasure to so many people through her music, inside, she was figuratively and physically hurting through the years. It's a very interesting, revealing look at Tina Turner. Can't recommend it enough. It's on HBO. It's running on HBO, but you can also see it on their streaming service, HBO Max. So one more documentary for everyone to check out. We've had some good documentaries this year, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. The Bee Gees one.
That was awesome. That was also really, really, really good. You going to watch this Tina Turner documentary, Schwann?
Yes, I would be interested in Tina Turner. I do like Tina Turner. There were all kinds of stories that came out through the years about Ike and the way he treated her and all kinds of things.
You know, that's an interesting thing that comes up in this documentary. And it's not a spoiler, but she talks about how she's constantly, since she left Ike Turner in the, I think it was the late 70s, late 70s, that she's never been able to shed Ike Turner and that horrible part of her life, that horrific nightmare that she lived through, never been able to shed that because people keep bringing it up in every single interview. It's one of the things, you know, she said that she wrote a book thinking, you know, she would just put the information out there and people would stop asking about that. And they never did. They just, you know, would constantly bring it up. Somebody asked if she had seen, remember that movie that came out, What's Love Got to Do with It? With Angela Bassett playing her. And she said that she had never seen it because she didn't want to relive the horror, didn't want to relive the nightmare of the whole thing. It's really quite fascinating. I think that's why so many people could relate to Tina Turner. So, highly recommending that. Highly recommending that you listen to the show today because we've got some really good interviews. This new movie that's out is called Sound of Metal, about a heavy metal drummer played by Riz Ahmed, who's been nominated for an Oscar. Co-stars an actor by the name of Paul Racy, plays kind of his advisor as this drummer begins to lose his hearing and goes to a center where other people who have hearing impairment, learn sign language and learn to deal with this new way of living. The guidance counselor, I guess you might say, is played by Paul Racy, and he's quite good. And he's been nominated for an Oscar also from this motion picture. He's from the South Side, you know. Originally from, I believe he said Bridgeport, and then moved to Oak Lawn, graduated Richards High School, Dean Richards High School. I don't know if you know, there's a high
they
school.
They named a high school after you.
In Oak Lawn, they named a high school after me.
Just go along with it, Andy. Yeah,
there is a Richards High School in Oak Lawn. But he graduated from there. He's a huge White Sox fan. And we caught up with him on a Zoom call this week, and we'll share that with you coming up later on. So, there you go. Also, thank you, everybody, for all the very, very nice words when I filled in for Ana de Vlantas this past Thursday and Friday on her show from 1 to 4. Thursday and Friday, we filled in, and we had some, lots of time and lots of laughs and some very interesting conversations. One of those conversations was with WGN-TV's Aaron Ivory, who disclosed this week that she had a heart attack. Now, Aaron Ivory is a relatively young woman. She's a young woman. It's been published before, so I guess I'm not hesitant to say she's 46 and had a heart attack. Can you believe that? She's fit. She's done triathlons, and she started to have some chest pain, some pain in her arm, and when it got checked out, and it turned out to be a blood clot in one of her aortic arteries. And they hospitalized her immediately. And while she was in the hospital, she had a heart attack. We talked with her when I was filling in for Anna this week. We're going to replay that conversation in case you missed it coming up a little bit later on. But you know what the number one conversation was, Shawnee, on our text line?
Judging from what I heard yesterday, it happened to be Gilligan's Island.
Well, we did have
a subject matter surrounding Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, well, I don't even know how we got on the subject, but it came up who would, of your WGN hosts and newscasters and, people who are on the air on WGN, if we were to recast Gilligan's Island, who would play who? We had a lot of votes for Mark Carman as Gilligan. We had a lot of votes for Steve Bertrand as Gilligan. We had some people thought I should be Skipper. I thought Shawnee should be Skipper. I could see Andy as a professor.
I'd like to be the professor.
Yeah, I could see Andy as the professor.
I can build a radio out of a coconut. But I'm not going to get you off the island.
Right. All these other people can come and go from the island, including, the Harlem Globetrotters? Yeah. Wound up on Gilligan's Island.
Don Rickles was on.
Don Rickles was there. Yeah. They all figured out how to get off the island, yeah. But the castaways never did. Mary, I was with Mary Vandeveld, and she thought she should be Marianne. So, we had a surprisingly lengthy conversation about that.
What about Mr. and Mrs. Howell?
Ah, well, that also came up. Now, see, that's what people thought, that I should be Skipper. I thought I would make a good Mr. Howell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Don't you think?
Yeah.
And who would play Lovey?
Well, I don't know. How do you look in a wig?
Well, we know he can play.
I don't know.
We know he can play female roles.
Oh, right.
He's shown that during the Christmas season.
Yeah, during our Christmas pageants.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. But I mean, that was one of the conversations. I'm always amazed at what sets the phone lines on fire and our text lines on fire. You know, we can talk about, the budgets. We can talk about important issues of the day, and nothing happens on the phone. Crickets on the phone. You bring up which WGN personalities would be good on Gilligan's Island, the phones blew up and didn't stop for about 2 hours after I dropped the subject.
Continued.
Yeah, we moved on to three or four other things, and people were still calling in. I think that Mary Vandeveld should be Ginger. She shouldn't be Marianne. So, that was one of the conversations. No, but the number one conversation, or the number one thing that was coming in on the text line of very, very, very nice people saying how much they enjoy our Sunday show.
Well, that's nice.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, people just saying, Dean... enjoying you here on the midday show. Some people said that. Some people didn't.
Yeah.
But I really...
Do we have to put up with you during the week, too?
Really? Don't we get enough of you on TV and radio? But people saying, I just want to say how much fun you guys are on Sunday morning. We got that over and over and over again. So
that's very nice to hear. Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you, everybody who... Apparently we're drunk and texted in, doing some drunk testing. Look, now the text line is starting over again.
Is it now?
With Gilligan's Island.
Oh.
815 area code thinks that Skilling should be the professor.
Oh, that makes sense.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I think Andy's a little more, I don't see Skilling building a radio out of coconuts.
No, I don't think so either.
I think Andy's a little more practical that way. Aaron as Ginger. Aaron Ivory as Ginger.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's very clever. Bob and Marianne, Bob Surratt and Marianne Murciano as the Howells.
Okay.
I guess I could see that.
Yeah.
Here's the 708 area code. Elton Jim Toronto as Lovey.
Oh, him. He being Lovey.
Okay, I don't want to start this up on the phones again. We only have 4 hours.
Yes.
I don't want to get into that. So, anywho, that's some of the things. Thank you very much, everyone who texted in. I had a lot of fun doing the show, and I know we all appreciate your nice words about this show. We try to have some fun, and at the same time, when there are things going on, when there's news, when there are important things going on, we also get into that as well. And you know what people look forward to most every Sunday morning? Do you know what that is?
I know.
I do. It's the far-flung forecast. That's what it is. Our weekly compendium of interesting facts and figures each week presented to us by the one and only Dave Lovey Schwann.
Oh, Thurston.
See?
He's showing off again.
You just naturally gravitate toward the cross-dressing roles for some reason.
Well, thank you very much, Uncle Dean, and good morning, everyone. Today, we really don't go all that far from the Chicago area here and to a city that is well known for us here in the Midwest, Dubuque, Iowa. Huh. Right across the Illinois, Iowa line. Population there now 57,882. This area was
Very precise, Shawnee.
I'm trying to be as precise and factual as I can be here.
Yeah, okay.
This area was first settled in the 1760s, and one of the first actual permanent residents was a man named Julien Dubuque. Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah,
what a arrived there in 1785. It is a beautiful city, actually, and it is the headquarters, really, or the center for the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the religious order, the Roman Catholic Order of Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And we bring this up and bring up Dubuque because one well-known and loved Chicagoan is a member of that order, none other than our sister Jean, who is a member of the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And what an inspiration Sister Jean is for everyone, not only for the Loyola Ramblers and the team. By the way, she played for a girls' basketball when she was in school. Born in San Francisco, August 21st, 1919.
Really? I never knew she was born in San Francisco.
Born in San Francisco and lived there, and then came here to study and stayed here in the Chicago area and has been affiliated with Loyola University for a long time. But she certainly was an inspiration for everybody. And, of course, disappointed to see that Loyola was eliminated from the Sweet 16 yesterday, but I'll tell you, it's just been great to see her there, and as I say, an inspiration. What more can you say about this
woman? 101 years old.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, 101.
Wow.
So, 1919, her birthday. But she is a member of the Sisters of Charity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, headquartered in Dubuque, Iowa. Their weather there, actually sunny today in Dubuque. As Morgan was pointing out in the weather forecast, we'll have clearer skies later today. That's because they've already moved out of Dubuque, Iowa. And Dean, if you know, clouds move from west to east.
Yes, I do know that.
So
I've seen that on weather maps.
That's why the Dubuque, Iowa area has sunny skies and 37 right now.
Do you think we'll all still be here doing the Sunday morning show when we're 101? Yeah. Schwanee doesn't have that long to go.
Thanks a lot. No.
Wouldn't that be something if we're still here when we're 101? And now here's the far-flung forecast.
What'd you say?
You know, she's still sharp as a tack, too. I mean, she had two or three media availabilities via Zoom before each of the rounds of the NCAA tournament. And I jumped on those just to see what was going on. And she's hilarious. I mean, she actually she knows every player for like the last 10, 15 years and remembers all this stuff. She's incredible.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, a lovely, lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on top of it, with all the notoriety. Aren't there Sister Jean bobbleheads?
There's three of them now.
Yeah.
There's three of them?
Three of them.
Three different bobbleheads, you mean.
And this last one, if I remember this correctly, was the number two selling bobblehead behind Dr. Fauci.
Wow.
And they have actually exchanged emails, which I found out on the last Zoom.
That's cool. That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm looking at the Sister Jean bobble. Wow, they're not inexpensive.
No. And there's a bobblehead Hall of Fame, just I believe in Wisconsin. I can't remember which city it is. But
I'm looking at a Sister Jean bobblehead on eBay right now.
Yeah,
how much does it go for?
$99.
Wow, yeah, they're going for a pretty penny
and 99 cents.
Yep.
So it's supposed to be a limited edition. It's Sister Jean holding a basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yep. So she's got three bobbleheads, and I've got none. Not that I'm bitter
about
it.
That makes three of us.
Well, someday. Someday. Someday we'll all have bobbleheads.
You want to be a bobblehead, Dean?
Why not?
No. You know, I'm not sure that it's that flattering. I'm not sure that. I mean, it's very nice. It's a nice honor. I get it. But it's like a caricature. They are very rarely flattering in any way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. True.
$99. The Michael Jordan bobblehead's only going for $46.
There's a lot of those, though.
Well, I'm sure the Sister Jean one is very much in demand right now. So that would, explain the price.
There's a Kobe Bryant bobblehead, $49. Sister Jean is twice as expensive.
Hmm.
How about that?
No. Amazing.
All right.
We'll have to find out where this museum is and then do the show from there.
Yeah, the Bobblehead Hall of Fame.
I have plenty of room on my list of places where we should do the show.
All right. Just add it to the list.
Are we done? I forgot.
We are done.
We are done.
All
right.
Yes, we are.
Well, then let's do this. WGN. Dr. Most, my friend, how are you this morning?
Dean, I am doing great. How about yourself?
Doing very well, but concerned. I'm happy to see people are getting vaccines. I understand that, you know, blocks of appointments are going to become available today. So, you know, for people who haven't been able to get an appointment, apparently today around noon, check at, you know, all the places that you've been checking. And I'm told that appointments are going to pop up. But I'm concerned about... The numbers are going up here in Chicago, here in Illinois, the number of people testing positive instead of going down because we're getting vaccinated and people are being careful and wearing masks and socially distancing, going the other way. I can only imagine how concerned you must be about this.
Very concerned. And, you know, we're fortunate that we vaccinated as much as we have, because when you see the rates going positive as much as they are now, I shudder to think if our vaccines were delayed, what a mess we would continue to be in. But you're absolutely right. The number of cases is going up. And the bigger concern, you know, the data coming out of U of I, which is being able to genetically sequence this, is sure enough, as we thought, that British variant is becoming the dominant variant here in Illinois and in the United States.
You think that that's what's causing this uptick? It's not... you know, spring break and, you know, people who are being careless and, you know, people who, you know, think that it's going to be okay for them to not socially distance or wear a mask.
No, I think it's the combination of the two. You have a strain that is much more contagious, and now you've allowed people to congregate again. Had we had the same mitigation factors with a strain that's more contagious, we wouldn't be seeing as big an increase. But now, between spring break and restaurants opening and things, and you look across the country, everyone is loosening up quite a bit right now. And boy, I'll tell you, this timing, this is like one of those horse races where you don't know who's going to finish first until the last couple. Is the vaccine going to win over, or are we going to see another big bump?
So should we not be reopening? Should restaurants not be expanding? Should restrictions not be lifting? Do you think we should... You think we should stay under, you know, kind of strict quarantine right now?
I look at it and say, you guys, this has been over a year. Supply of vaccine will outstrip demand in the next 3 weeks. Everybody who's waiting for a shot right now, I assure you, they're look at Johnson & Johnson. They're going to release 11 million doses themselves this week. And like you said, we're going to see a lot more openings. You have 47 states that are going to be vaccinating anybody over the age of 16 by May 1st. That's only a couple weeks away. So if people are going to go out, I understand the frustration. The weather's getting nice. But please be as careful as you possibly can about who you're around, how close you are. Do your masking, do your distancing, because we are so close to having what could be a somewhat normal summer.
I see the footage on television from spring break, and I know it's not a vast majority of the population, but all these kids who are, you know, partying and, you know, they're drinking and their inhibitions are down, their common sense is down. They're going to be going back to their homes soon. They're going to be going back to their families and their parents and their grandparents and their workplaces. That concerns me greatly. Easter Sunday is next week when people are going to, you know, want to get together with their families. Yeah. That concerns me quite a bit.
Yeah, 100%. You hit it on the head when you talked about the spring breakers. When you look at the people who are turning positive right now, it is that young adult age, anywhere from, you know, we look at the 16 to like 30, and then we look at 30 to 39. Those are the two biggest groups that are positive right now. And just as you said, those spring breakers are coming back to potentially vulnerable parents or potentially vulnerable grandparents, again, who we're trying to protect. I would say we're pretty lucky that 50% of those over the age of 65 have been vaccinated. So we're really getting that vulnerable population protected. But boy, a couple more weeks would really be nice.
Yeah. It's, and I just don't know that people really want to do that. Everybody's so anxious to, you know, quote, get back to normal as possible. I mean, you know, from my beat that I cover, entertainment, the movie theaters are beginning to open again. And I've had the movie studios contact me, you know, asking if I'm comfortable seeing movies back in a theater again. And I said, you know, I guess it depends on the circumstances of how many people are there and what kind of distancing there is and what kind of protections there are. But if given my choice, I would rather not go to places like that to tell, you know, right. Even though, you know, that it's probably safe. You know, this is the last time I went into a theater during the pandemic, there were only about five people in the whole theater. You know, I'm sure it was safe, but I'd be lying if I said that I was comfortable being in there.
Correct. You know, there's that difference between safe and comfortable, and there's that difference between normal and normalcy. So, you know, normal in the old normal would have been that the theater's packed, that you're looking for two seats together, you know, that you can't even get in because it's a new hit. Is the new normal going to be that you're going to have a bunch of empty seats? But my just say is, you know, we're getting close to a point where we're going to be starting to look at herd immunity numbers. And boy, wouldn't it be nice to be able to go in and feel comfortable in a setting, yeah, because you know that the virus can't spread in the setting because of the vaccine numbers that we've hit.
Right, right. I mean, that's the difference. While on paper, while people may be vaccinated, you know, while it's probably safer than it was a year ago, it is safer than it was a year ago. We know just because we know a lot more about it now, you know, people are just still not comfortable in settings like that. I'm not. I mean, that's maybe that's just me. 312-981-7200 is our phone number for your questions for Dr. Kevin Most. 312-981-7200. We'll get you on the phone. We'll get you on the text line. Again, 312-981-7200. 815, Kevin says, I was exposed a week ago Friday and am quarantining. I have no symptoms. How soon can I get my vaccine?
So quarantined a week ago Friday, so they're hitting that 10-day mark right now. They can get vaccinated immediately. And actually, anybody who even has had COVID now, remember we were asking people, if you tested positive, please wait 90 days. That was a supply-demand issue. they can get vaccinated. So just because you've been exposed and quarantined does not mean you can be vaccinated. Once your quarantine is over, then you can go to a public place to get vaccinated. But really, there'll be no time difference in your vaccination timing.
708 area code, would it be safe for me that has not received the vaccine to go bowling for a couple of hours on Monday?
You know, again, it depends. Who are you bowling with? And is it a large group? Is it a small group? If you're bowling by yourself or another close friend and you kind of keep your distance, that's okay. We're not worried about bowling balls giving you COVID, but we would be concerned if you were with a group of six people bowling and none of you have been vaccinated. Certainly the chance of spread would definitely be there.
So, I mean, I know it may sound like a silly question that you can't get COVID from a bowling ball, but I've always been weary about sticking my fingers in the holes on the ball, thinking somebody else's fingers were just in there, and I don't know where their fingers have been.
That's very true, and I'd be more concerned about the shoes that you're putting on.
Really?
The bowling shoes that you're putting on.
I mean, they're definitely nasty, but because of COVID, you mean, or just because they're nasty?
No, just because of a possible foot fungus versus COVID.
Yeah,
No, I would not be overly concerned about the bowling ball. You know, if you wash your hands, if you're not touching your face, you're doing all those things. We haven't seen a whole bunch of transmission from object to individual. It's really been individual to individual.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because remember, a year ago, you know, we were talking about when you bring your groceries home and put them on the porch for a day, or
right,
bring them inside and spray everything down before you, you know, put things away. And now we know that that's not so much the case.
Yeah, people weren't even opening their mail sometimes for 3 or 4 days, leaving that sit in the garage and, you know, making sure that there was no COVID virus on that from the mail carriers. People were afraid to open packages from China for a long time. So, we've come a long way and we've learned a lot over the past, you know, 12, 13 months.
Right. As Kevin has told me so many times, you know, we're learning about this. We're learning new things every single day. This is not something that we've had before. 847 area code says, Dr. Most, I am type 2 diabetic. I received the Moderna vaccine 10 days ago, first dose. Since then, my blood sugar has been running much higher. Tough to keep it down. Is that normal with the vaccine?
Well, sometimes when diabetics are under stress and they have any inflammatory response, they will. And sometimes when they take steroids, they will. So if you're taking steroids, certainly watch out for that. We haven't seen that as a side effect for diabetics, but we do know that diabetics under stress will have big swings in their blood sugar. So I wouldn't make that hesitate me stopping from getting the second dose, however, because we know that diabetics are at a much higher risk for adverse outcomes if they were to get COVID. Monitor your blood sugars, do your swings, take your insulin appropriately, but still stay on time for your vaccination.
Yeah, a lot of the stories that we're hearing from people now have to do with the reactions that they're getting. Most often stories after the second vaccine, but that seems to be a lot of the COVID conversation right now. Like Catherine, for example, your husband had a reaction after the second shot, right?
Yes, he did. He received his second Pfizer vaccine Friday, and now he has, I would say it's like almost as big as a golf ball-sized lump underneath his arm, like in a lymph node area. Is that normal?
Yes, Catherine. As a matter of fact, you make a very good point that we need to make sure we talk to people about. So your lymph nodes can swell up after a COVID vaccine. So for males, okay, it's a little bit uncomfortable. For females, you have to make sure that you're not doing your timing of your mammogram near that. You want to have your mammogram before your vaccine because of that exact same thing. Swollen lymph nodes on a mammogram can make people start to think about a potential for a cancer diagnosis when, in fact, it's just the response from the vaccine. But, yes, that is normal. Tell your husband, take some Advil, and those, as the inflammatory response declines, it will go right back to normal.
About how long normally does that take?
It's usually, if you have swelling in the lymph nodes, it's probably going to take a few weeks. You know, that's actually even what they're recommending individuals who have been vaccinated and say, oh my gosh, I am due for my mammogram. We're going to ask that you postpone that a few weeks.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. He was very worried.
Good luck with that, Catherine. Thank you for your call. This is Chrissy. You're on with Dr. Kevin Most on WGN.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a 19-year-old son that has food allergies, and I was wondering if he should wait to take the vaccine with a doctor, you know, at a hospital or a clinic or his main doctor before going into, you know, like the Cook County or
Walgreens,
you know, another
or
location.
Yeah, right.
I know he needs to bring his EpiPens with. I understand that. I was just wondering the doctor's opinion.
Yeah, Chrissy, you know, initially when we first started out, we were trying to refrain from anybody with bad food allergies. In other words, the peanut allergy that needs that EpiPen. We're saying, hey, let's get everyone else vaccinated and you'll get the herd immunity protection without being vaccinated. Many are saying, hey, I still want to be vaccinated, but you make probably the most important point. Not only having his EpiPen with him, but he is an individual that should be vaccinated in a hospital setting. Not in a drive-through clinic, not in one of the mass vaccinations where they're just watching you for 15 minutes, in a setting where there's an emergency room close by that could act on an allergic reaction. Now, it's not happening with all people with allergies, but those that we know about, we'd rather be safe than sorry and rather be prepared in case of a bad outcome or a bad allergic reaction. So you want to be in the right setting for him. So certainly no Walgreens, CVS, mass vaccination sites when he is to be vaccinated.
Okay, so that could be months out, though, still, correct?
No, you know, as I was telling Dean earlier, you know, I think we are going to have a glut of vaccine here very, very soon, within the next few weeks.
Thank you so much.
Good luck, Chrissy. Thank you for your call. 309 area code. My husband just tested positive for COVID-19. I am fully vaccinated. Should I now get tested again?
No, no reason to. You know, we're concerned about if she were to get symptoms, then we would not only want to test her, but we would want her to inform the individual that was doing the test that she had been vaccinated, because those are the individuals that we're looking to see, is it a variant? And if it is a variant, which one is it? Because we're starting to see a small number of people who have been fully vaccinated and yet will get full-blown COVID, and it's often one of the variants. And we're trying to find out the effective rate of all of the vaccines against the variants. So no reason to get tested, you know, unless you start to have symptoms. There's nothing that they're going to do and no need for you to be worried. You should actually feel very confident if you've been fully vaccinated that chances are only 5 in 100 that you would even get COVID.
847 area code wants Dr. Most's opinion on the holding of the Tokyo Olympics. I mean, it is going to be less public than it's been in the past, but still, it's going to be a lot of people, you know, in each other's faces for competition there. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I, you know, you look at what they've done with baseball, with NBA, with the NFL, with the NCAA, you know, and those are microcosms of the Olympics because you have a much more uniform group. I'm a little concerned, you know, I would say if all the athletes are fully vaccinated and everyone, the coaches and trainers are fully vaccinated, okay, because you have a lot of close contact sports during the Summer Olympics, and you also have the limited number of fans, which will decrease international travel, which is unfortunate for the athletes, but it's probably the safest going forward.
In Barcelona, Spain, over the weekend, they held the first public concert. It's believed to be the first mass concert, you know, in over a year. 5,000 people attended this concert. You had to be get an instant COVID test before they would let you in. You had to wear your mask during the concert, but they did not have social distancing. If you know, concert venues started doing that in the U.S., is that safe?
No, you know, it's amazing that Spain did it. You know, when their country just, you know, next to them has gone into essentially partial lockdown, and we're seeing in Europe a big bump up like this. Concerts, unfortunately, anyone who goes to a concert all of a sudden thinks that they are as good as the artist and they sing along with them. So, you know, we have a lot. It's not like people are sitting just listening. And when you're in that close environment like that and you're yelling, screaming, singing, the chance of spread is much higher.
Even with a mask on?
Most certainly. You know, masks are great, but they're not 100% by any means.
Okay.
And it would be interesting if people did keep them on. If you told me that they were all vaccinated and tested negative, boy, I'd feel a whole heck of a lot more comfortable.
Right.
But, I'm certainly looking at things like Lollapalooza and concerts at Wrigley coming back to somewhat normal, you know, midsummer, when we can show that our vaccination rate is over 80%.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out and where we are with positivity at that stage of the game. Always good to talk to you, Kevin. Thank you so much, as usual, for the great information. Dr. Kevin Most, Medical Director, Central DuPage Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Kev. Thank you.
Take care, Dean. We'll talk soon.
WGN. What's the name of the boat in the Suez Canal?
Well, there was some confusion over the actual name of the boat is the Ever Given. But if you look at the side of the boat, mm-hmm. port side or starboard side, mm-hmm. it will say Evergreen. But that is the name of the marine company that owns the boat.
But Ever Given
is the name of the boat. Yes.
Is the actual name of it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Godspeed to them. Hopefully they'll get that. That's amazing how expensive that is. How expensive it is to have a single boat. Boat's not really the right word for that, right?
That is a vessel, a vessel, ship.
That vessel.
Yeah. That's it's a monstrosity.
Blocking off everything else like
well,
that.
Well, this will give you an idea of how big it is. If you could take that boat and stand it upright, mm-hmm. it is roughly the height of the Empire State Building.
What?
Yes. Seriously.
Wow.
Yeah, it's that big. And that's comparable in size to a lot of those other vessels. To carry that amount of cargo, also to withstand long-term shipping on the ocean, because they are literally going around the world. And so, and once they get this free, it's still not over because all of those other ships have to get through also. Some of the ones that haven't made a very long detour around Africa.
Right.
So it's going to be really months before all of that would be all clear finally.
Yeah, that's a very interesting dilemma that they're facing. Coming up in a couple of minutes, we're going to replay the conversation that we had with WGN TV's Aaron Ivory. When I was filling in for Ana DeVlantis the other day, that was the day that Aaron revealed publicly that she had suffered a heart attack. This, seemingly incredibly energetic, healthy mom of four started to get some aches and pains in her chest and in her arm, went to have it checked out, and turns out she had a blood clot. They put her right into the hospital, and while she was in the hospital, suffered a heart attack. She joined us on the phone to give us all the details of that, and we'll share that with you in a couple of minutes. Chwani, I don't want to say that I wasn't hanging on your every word during the newscast.
No, you never do.
But I was just looking at some recipes. I don't know if anyone else does this. I was scrolling. in my spare time, I just like to look at recipes. I get a lot of websites that send me. They send me new recipe ideas all the time. So I enjoy it. I scroll through. This one is called Best Grilling Recipe Ideas. I grilled this week.
Did you?
Yeah, I got out on the grill this week and I made some, some chicken shish kebab on the grill.
Oh, nice.
Delicious.
With vegetables or fruit?
With vegetables.
Yes,
with,
wonderful.
With some Vidalia onions and some zucchini squash. And what else did I put? Mushrooms.
And mushrooms,
yeah. It's really, I got to say, really good.
That is.
But I got some interesting ideas here. Here in this email that I got this morning, grilled glazed donuts.
Grilled glazed donuts.
So you go to the store and you get your glazed donuts, and then you take them home and you put them on the grill for a couple of minutes, and they get these nice grill marks on them. I got to think it. There's already like nothing but sugar. The glaze is nothing but sugar. You can't put it on very long or you'll burn up your donuts. And we all know how painful that would be to have your donuts burnt. I am so 8 years old today.
Okay. I'm going to go prepare the
That sounds
next
good,
newscast.
Though. No, but wait, listen to this. Listen to this. Here's another. It's a burger that has bacon and all the other fixins, lettuce, tomato, you know, all that, and peanut butter.
Hmm.
Does that sound good to you?
I don't know.
A peanut butter burger?
You know, they had one of those, I want to say, at the Maravids Golf Course, the little clock tower restaurant that they have there. Had a when Joe Maddon was the manager of the Cubs, he liked peanut butter on his burger, and they had a, they had it, and it was kind of the it was soft and kind of runny.
Yeah,
it right. looked well, disgusting, but my friend ate it.
Would melt.
Thought
yeah.
I loved it.
I had one in Minneapolis.
Producer Ryan,
did you like it?
It was really good. Yeah, just like you said, Andy. It melts.
Yeah,
you know, peanut butter when you put it on there, it has that nice thick consistency, but then as it hits that warm bun and yeah, just goos.
And
oh,
the bacon.
It's really good. And the bacon, too.
The peanut butter and the bacon.
And you would
like
you would leave cheese off the burger, though, if you're putting peanut butter on
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you would hope. I would hope so. Yeah. I can't remember what I had. It was a couple years ago, but
with
I remember.
Lettuce and tomato, maybe, with it?
Let me see what this recipe calls for here. Ground beef, salt, pepper, bacon, lettuce, tomato, pickles, onion, no cheese.
No cheese.
No cheese.
Yeah.
I like the pickles and tomato.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the pickles and peanut butter. That sounds like a good combo.
This is something we need to try.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I was surprised. I remember thinking, well, you know, I should branch out. I always just get burgers, yeah. You know, so.
Young Ryan is the adventurous, not only adventurous eater, adventurous cook as well.
Well, he's yeah, young sometimes. And vivacious.
It's fun.
Yeah, he's always trying out. What did you cook this week?
Bunless burgers. So I was telling you, put lettuce down.
Yeah.
Avocado.
Like iceberg lettuce. So
yeah.
It's like in a cup, right?
Okay. Yep. And then avocado in the consistency of, you know, guacamole.
Mush it up a little bit, right?
Yep. And then the burger and melted cheese on top of it.
Ooh.
Red onion, tomato, pickles.
That sounns good.
Sunny side egg over it.
Oh, see,
a sunny side egg.
Yeah. You lost me with the egg.
You've never, you don't like that?
I don't, yeah. That's eggs,
yeah.
Eggs shouldn't be on burgers. Should be against the law.
I think, I can't remember if that's the first time I've tried it, but it's pretty good when the yolk runs.
Yeah, I know.
Into
people
the,
seem to like it. People,
yeah.
With my luck, it just run down my sleeve. And
I did make my own patties.
That's why we give you a bib whenever we eat one. We put Shawnee in his high chair and with the bib on.
Says twinkle.
Put some Cheerios on the little table.
Throws them at everybody.
With his sippy cup.
Filled with vodka. yeah, I guess I have to be more open-minded, I guess, to the egg on burger.
Yeah, I did make my own patties.
I just like standard burgers. I just like regular burgers. You made your own patties.
Yeah.
Nice.
Put an egg yolk in that, kind of hold it together a
very
little
nice.
Bit.
Very
yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Oof. Pretty good.
All right. There's a couple of ideas. I'm going to try that peanut butter burger, and I'll get back to everybody.
That makes two of us. I'm going to try that also.
All right. All right. Let's meet back here next week.
And we'll discuss it.
And we'll discuss our peanut butter burgers. And 22, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. You may have read about it at robertfeeder.com. Behind the scenes at WGN-TV, we knew that Aaron Ivory had been having some health issues. We didn't know the extent of them, for me at least, until last week when we learned that Aaron had a heart attack, believe it or not. She's 46 years old and, you know, seemingly the picture of health. But as I had mentioned before, had some pain in her chest and in her arm and went to get it checked out. And turned out she had a blood clot in her aortic aortic valve. So they put her in the hospital. It moved, causing a heart attack. When I was filling in for Anna DeVlantis the other day, I thought we'd call Erin and get the update and just check in with her and see how she was doing. It's a pleasure to welcome my pal, Aaron Ivory, to the show right now. Aaron.
Hello, Dean, Aaron, my dear friend.
Oh,
hello.
My gosh, I cannot tell you. We learned, you know, your husband, Demetrius, It has kept a really tight lip on this. I guess except with the bosses. But, you know, we in the office learned what was going on. And, you know, everybody without exception was shocked and so relieved and so happy that you're doing okay. Please tell me that you're doing okay.
I am. And I will tell you, I think for both Demetrius and myself, we were in a state of kind of just disbelief as well when this all kind of started about a month ago. But, you know, there was this outpouring of emails and messages flooding not only my inbox, but also Demetrius's. And I just felt the need to kind of just reassure people I was alive, right?
Right.
And just for them to know how much I appreciated their concern and their kind words. So that's why we made the call to put something out there.
Yeah. So how did you
more transparent, you know?
Yeah. How did you discover that something wasn't right?
Well, it was about a month ago. I had an abnormal EKG, and I had been kind of just experiencing chest pain and nausea, and I just thought, what the heck's going on? And it just continued to get worse. And so they did an MRI, and I wasn't home longer than an hour. And the cardiologist called back and said, you need to get to the emergency room right now.
Oh, wow.
And they had found that my heart function was pretty low, right around 22%.
Oh, man.
And there were blood clots in my heart, and that was their primary concern. So that was a hard one to swallow. And a very quiet ride to the hospital.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
And I was in the hospital for just over 2 weeks total, and they diagnosed me with, I'm going to go a little Doogie Howser on you, it's called Takotsubo. It's acute stress-induced cardiomyopathy, which basically means that, you know, the lower part, that left ventricle, is just not pumping the blood back out.
Right.
So that was what was ultimately pooling and causing all these clots that were then kind of moving through my body. So, yeah, it was definitely a shock to us, and it took all of those 2 weeks for me to really get my arms around what was going on.
Right. Did you have a surgery? How did they treat that?
Initially, that was the game plan. They were going to go in and try to aspirate these clots out of my heart, but then one of them was—I don't know how much detail you want—but it was sizable, and they were concerned that it would just dislodge and
it would
cause
move.
Other problems.
Yeah, right.
Right, right. So they had prepped me for surgery, and then that didn't end up happening. But then 3 weeks later, that clot did move, and that's what ultimately caused the heart attack. So the good news is it blocked it, but then it moved out of place again, because obviously I'm alive and here to tell you about it.
Yeah. Had you felt anything leading up to this? I mean, as I was talking about earlier, in our giant WGN newsroom, there's nothing but cubicles, and Aaron and I are directly across from each other. You know, we're in each other's phone conversations all the time.
Well, that's what I say. We are desk mates, and that does mean you are privy to snippets of one another's lives.
Right. And I feel like, some of my conversations yelling at people on the phone may have caused your heart attack. So I'm glad to hear that it wasn't my fault that this all happened.
No, not at all. I'm using this to my advantage when it comes to the family and parenting. Like, come on, you guys all know what happens.
Right.
My heart gets stressed here.
Absolutely.
You know, it's been a fantastic manipulation tool
Absolutely.
Here at home.
Motherly guilt. You can't beat it. But I just know how busy you are and how active you are and how physically fit you are. Everything. I mean, that was the shock to everybody, and I'll bet to you and Demetrius also, because you are both very active people, and the last people that you would think would have a heart trouble.
Right, right. And we did kind of have a laugh about that, because as fit as Demetrius is, he likes a Popeye sandwich, and that man loves chips and fries and everything else. And so he looked at me after I'd been in the hospital for a good week, and he said, you know what I'm thinking? He's like, all your clean eating really didn't work out well for you. He's like, I think I've been right all along here.
Oh,
and,
man.
And I thought, you know, he might just be right.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, it wasn't a case of, anything typical. You know, it wasn't congestive heart failure. It wasn't plaque built up or any cholesterol or anything like that. It was just kind of the very strange way that my body was responding to stress, and it impacted my heart.
Is it something, you know, genetic? You know, can they trace it that way, or it's just
one of those weird flukes? Every test under the sun, I'm pretty certain of it. I think I lost about half my blood there in the hospital with all the blood draws.
Oh, man.
But no, there was nothing genetic. And so, you know, it's not very common. I was told it's certainly not common in someone who's, you know, younger than 80. So I think even the cardiologists were scratching their heads a little bit about, you know, what we were dealing with here.
Well, thank goodness you're okay. Thank goodness you're on the mend.
Yeah, I do feel really lucky. I really do.
Yeah. We just, you know, I want to send our love to you and how happy we are that you're doing better. And, you know, really the bottom line of this whole thing, I mean, the message for everybody is don't ignore aches and pains. Don't ignore little pains that you may be having, or, you know, being out of breath or things like that. Because really, it's because you were proactive. It probably saved your life, right?
Yeah, I did ignore them for a while. In all honesty, I really did. But you are absolutely right, Dean. You know, that chest pain, that nausea and numbness, all of it is really, it's important you listen to your body. And I know that now. I learned the hard way.
Yeah. Well, I promise whenever you come back to work, and don't rush, please take your time and, you know, get fully healed. Whenever you come back, I promise I won't yell at anybody on the phone anymore. We're going to have a stress-free zone where our cubicles are, okay?
Oh, my gosh, a zen zone. Well, you just know I am sending you guys lots of love, and you better enjoy the reprieve, Dean, because your death mate will be back, all right?
Can't wait. We cannot wait. We can't wait to see you back there. Sending you big hugs, big love.
Thank you, Dean. Back at you.
We miss you, Aaron. Take care of yourself.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. There's our pal, Aaron Ivory, doing much better after an unbelievable health scare. So many nice comments and people sending their best wishes to her. I've been looking forward to talking with Linda Denise Fisher-Harrell, who is the recently named artistic director of Hubbard Street Dance Chicago. My history with Hubbard Street goes back quite a way. With my hosting the Dance for Life benefit for 20 years, in which the top dance companies in Chicago all participated and donated performances for this special evening once a year that was working to help dancers who were going through various health crises. It started as an AIDS benefit and then evolved into just helping dancers, and still does today. But for 20 years, I hosted that. For all of those 20 years, Hubbard Street Dance participated, as did Joffrey and Gus Giordano and some of the major dance companies in the Chicago area. So, Linda, it's nice to have you on the show here today, and not exactly to welcome you to Chicago, because you've been here before. You were part of Alvin Ailey in your past, correct?
I was. Good morning, Dean. I hope you're well.
Doing very, very well, yeah, but it's kind of a homecoming for you, isn't it?
It is. So I started my professional dance career at Hubbard Street Dance Chicago.
Oh, okay.
I was hired by Lou Conti, the founder.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, so I was there for 3 years, and then I left and became a principal dancer with the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater for 13 years.
Yeah, so it's got to be kind of special for you to come back to Hubbard Street now as its artistic director, huh?
It's insane. It's amazing, surreal, but coming full circle, if you will.
Yeah. And Hubbard Street is getting ready to debut its 43rd season. This is going to be going on, I think, for a bit. But explain how all of this will work. The final performance is today. It's been put online virtually the last couple of days, and today at 2 p.m. is the final performance of this season debut. Explain a little about this.
Sure. So our season 43, actually started in August, And so this entire season, which will end in June, we've been doing a virtual homecoming. So we've been presenting dance films. And actually, today is the last performance or showing of the third film that Hubbard Street has presented this season. And we're presenting In Any Event, mm-hmm. which was choreographed by former Hubbard Street dancer Penny Saunders. And so the last performance is today at 2 p.m.
What kind of challenges has Hubbard Street and other dance companies faced during the pandemic? I mean, nobody's got live audiences anymore. It's really called for, exercising your creative muscles to keep presenting art for the past year, yeah. right?
Exactly. So one thing that dancers are good at is a good old pivot. So we've been able to pivot on a dime. I think the night that the lockdown was actually announced, the dancers were supposed to be going on stage to perform. And that night they were performing backstage and filming dance and presenting it online, like the day of the shutdown. So we've been able to do that and continue to connect with audiences virtually. So we've had a lot of free classes online, free company classes, educational classes, and our season 43 virtual homecoming are actual dance works that have been made into film, and we've offered them for free. So it's almost making our company, the entire organization, more accessible during the pandemic. So it's not a blessing, but we are able to reach wider audiences in the pandemic.
Yeah, and making the best out of a situation like this as well. I would think that part of your challenge now is, looking forward. How do you plan what's going to be coming up in the next months, years, when we're not exactly sure if there are going to be audiences allowed in theaters yet?
COVID has really taught us a lot about planning and how ridiculous that can be sometimes. And I think that's the hardest thing, is not knowing where the vaccines are going to take us and whether we're able to actually gather in a theater, and what is an audience going to look like once we gather. So it's been very difficult to try to plan things when you don't even know what the guidelines are going to be. So, just like any other dance company or show, planning has just been a tremendous challenge.
So do you have things on the docket, or do you have a plan A and plan B? And if this happens, we'll do that. How does that work?
You have to have a plan Z.
Plan Z. Oh, boy. Okay.
But I mean, you have to be able to have, a backup plan. We do plan to be back into the theaters. But once we get there and we're not allowed in the theaters, you have to have another plan. So, yes, we do plan to be back in the theaters this fall. But, we're in constant communication with theaters and in our community to see if we can even do that. And then how are we able to gather? Are we still socially distancing? All of those things come into play.
So what was it like for you to become artistic director of Hubbard Street, Linda Denise? Because, I was thinking about this. With all the dance companies that I've worked with through the years, I can think of maybe one or two that have had women as their artistic directors. It's kind of a boys' club, and you've broken the glass ceiling with this, haven't you?
And it's long overdue. And not only am I the first woman, I'm the first woman of color.
Yeah.
The artistic director at Hubbard Street Dance Chicago. And so it is a tremendous responsibility. I don't take my job lightly. I want to bring excellence and all positive things and attention to the company. Luke Conte founded a tremendous organization. I stand on his shoulders and those of the artistic directors that came before me. And so I find this to be such a special opportunity. I've been in the dance field for a very long time. I want to say 37 years as a performer and as an educator, a choreographer. So I've been in this game for a very long time and feel fortunate to now have the blessing of directing the company.
So what's your vision? What how would you like to see yourself, you know, guiding this world-renowned dance company?
Yeah. So it's almost twofold. So I want to bring new voices, new choreographic voices to the stage, maybe some artists who have never choreographed on the company. You know, contemporary dance, if you think of the meaning of contemporary, it means now. So what are the voices and choreography that are happening now, and how can I present those new voices to the stage and also diversify the audience base? You know, maybe that we have some audiences that we haven't tapped into, and I want them to come in and experience Hubbard Street. And I don't want to ignore our past. You know, we've picked up a lot of audience members along the way since the late 70s when the company was founded. I don't want to lose those audiences. You know, you'd never want to, you know, build a company on such a rich legacy and then turn your back on it.
Sure.
So there's a balance that I have to do in reaching back and honoring what came before and blending it with the new voices of the future.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I wish you nothing but the best of luck. As I've said to other artistic directors and managers of theaters, CEOs of venues who are just now taking the reign at their various jobs. Boy, you picked a one heck of a time to come into this. I mean, talk about the challenges that you and others, you know, who are taking over new jobs in entertainment right now. This has got to be the most challenging time in the history of entertainment, I would think.
It is very challenging. But, you know, on the bright side, if we can get through this, we can get through anything. That's
right.
How I look at it.
Yeah.
So I might be naive in my optimism, but I'm optimistic.
No, I think your attitude is 100% correct that, you know, once we make it through this, we kind of figure out what the new normal is going to be proceed from there. That's exactly the way to do it. So if people want to take a look at In Any Event, which is the 30-minute piece that is running today at 2 o'clock, is the final opportunity to see it. How does one tap into this?
Sure. So if you go to our website, HubbardStreetDance.com, In Any Event is right there on our homepage. And you have to click the RSVP button. And once you do that, you will receive a link to the live stream. And I encourage everyone to watch the entire performance because there is a live talkback session immediately following with the choreographer.
Oh, great. That sounds great. HubbardStreetDance.com take a look at this. And Linda Denise Fisher-Harrell, looking forward to speaking with you again about the many projects that certainly will be coming from Hubbard Street Dance Chicago.
Thank you so much for your support, Dean.
Pleasure to talk to you, and have a great Sunday today. Thank you. Chicago's very own WGN. What is the 262 area code? I'm not familiar with that.
Not sure.
262.
Not sure.
Got a text from wherever that is. I love your Sunday morning show. Thank you and God bless you all. God bless you both.
It's Milwaukee.
Very nice. It is Milwaukee, yes.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, hey, up there in Milwaukee there. I've had a urge to go to the Mars Cheese Castle for the past few weeks. I don't know why.
Well, why don't you go?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's a journey.
It's a journey.
It's far. Can't they come to us?
It's a journey.
Isn't it about time they open a branch here in Chicago so we can get our...
Well, we have Kilwin's Fudge.
Get our cheese curds easier than that. I've just had... maybe it's just, you know, with the pandemic, I've just been wanting to go someplace.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like it's just a little road trip. Like that.
I know. I'm missing that too.
Yeah. You especially. You're Mr. Road Trip.
We ended up, my father and I, we ended up doing a one-day trip to Michigan and back. And
recently?
Last fall. Oh. But we were going to go.
But during the pandemic?
During the pandemic, we just ended up doing one day trip.
Right.
And this was just before additional travel restrictions were imposed in Indiana and Michigan.
Yeah.
So it was either now or never. And we were going to go to Northern Michigan last summer, and then that got pushed back.
Yeah.
Maybe this year.
Got to be careful. Got to be careful.
Yeah.
Because Paul Schwann, your dad, is how old?
He will be 99 next month.
Wow.
He's fully vaccinated, too, by the way.
And what NCAA team does he represent?
That will be no doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it will be the University of Michigan.
Okay, let's get him.
Beyond any stretch of the doubt,
Let's push this. I think that would be fantastic, because your dad's very energetic.
He is the most loyal Michigan fan there is.
Really? See?
I did not know that.
When he was there, and by the way, you mentioned the class of 43 for Bud in Oregon.
Yeah.
Dad was in the class of 1943 in Michigan.
How about that?
Never missed a home football game.
I'd love to see him on the sidelines trash talking somebody.
They're playing Florida State today.
Trash talking who?
Whoever the senior citizen is for the other team.
You got to find out who Florida State's senior citizen is, because that's the matchup today in the Sweet 16 between Michigan and Florida State.
Oh,
yeah. See, we got to get your dad. We got to get him a gig being the senior mascot for that team.
He is always very worked up when the Michigan football plays that school in Ohio.
Oh, my.
Andy knows what I'm talking about.
Oh boy,
yes, the.
I love that. how's Mr. Schwann doing? How's Paul doing?
He's fine. He's doing well, and he is very anxious to get out and do some stuff.
I'll bet, because your dad's extremely active, and I could see where he would have felt claustrophobic, because he was in a retirement community, right?
Well, he is, yes.
But that's been all retirement communities have been pretty much shut down over the past year, but there's a little movement, I guess, now.
Yeah, right? There is somewhat. And when we've had these warmer days here past few weeks, he was outside walking around, taking in the warmer weather.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Get a little fresh air. I'm glad.
Yep.
I was a little worried because, normally once or twice a week, your dad would call me complaining about you.
Now you see, there's the trash talk trying
to get me. He was calling, Dean, I'm sorry to bother you again. Is there any way that you can get Schwanny? I don't even know why he calls you Schwanny. He said, can you get Schwanny to quit calling me so much? A lot of parents want their kids to call him. Paul calls me all the time and says, can you get him off my back? He's bugging me. Cramping my style, I believe, were the exact words.
They called him Schwanny too.
Schwanny too or Schwanny
no,
also?
Schwanny also.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, you're Schwanny too.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, you're Schwanny Jr.
I'm Schwanny Jr.
Technically, you're Schwanny Jr. So, well, anyway, give him our best.
I will.
One of the best guys there is.
Thank you.
We've talked about this on the show before, how close we came to Schwanny and I becoming stepbrothers
There's a picture to prove that, too.
Yeah, when we were doing the shows out at Tree Time, and I brought my mom, who was, I think, a year younger than dad. And your dad saw my mom and thought, ooh, who's that young babe over there? And start putting the moves on my mom. And, we had to bust that up because, I am not spending every Christmas with Schwanny. That's not happening. So, anyway, no, seriously, he's the best. He's just the best guy. such a good sense of humor.
I think
humor.
He may have turned off the radio by now.
Yeah, he's calling me, all right. I'm sure I'm going to have a call now. A lot of shows are, dealing with the Georgia elections right now, with all the controversies going on in Congress. I wanted to get into an even bigger controversy, where the best corned beef sandwich is in Chicago. Somebody should have asked President Biden this question the other day. What's your favorite corned beef sandwich? Because that really is an issue facing America today. The Tribune's got an article in which they list the top 24 corned beef sandwiches in the Chicago area. And they list places like AP Deli. It's a mostly South Side. They have three locations, I guess. One in Harvey, one on 75th Street in South Shore, and one at 107th in Michigan in the Roseland neighborhood. They list, what is this place called? The Bensonhurst at Bergstein's New York Deli. Normally, I'm very suspicious when any deli in Chicago goes out of their way to put New York in their name. That scares me a little bit. They're in Chicago Heights. They list, let's see here, what do we have? This is the Chi-Town Sandwich Club. I guess they make a good sandwich, 2921 North Clark Street. My favorite, I like Manny's.
Me too.
I think Manny's puts out a fantastic corned beef sandwich. You get the potato pancake with it.
Oh, yeah.
You're set for the week.
You can't go wrong with that. You're full for the whole week after you have that. Have you had a corned beef sandwich over at Chief O'Neill's in the Avondale?
No, I saw the picture online from this article you're talking about.
It's a good corned beef sandwich. Chief O'Neill's
is great to start with.
Yeah. I mean, considering that it's a pub, really, it's an Irish pub, and they've got a restaurant, they make exceptionally good food there, not just sandwiches, but they make an exceptionally good corned beef sandwich, and that one's, you know, kind of close to WGN, so you know that's a good stop. Plus, I just learned by reading this Tribune article that their traditional Irish weekend brunch that they've done for years and years and years and years that stopped during the pandemic, they're going to start doing it again for Mother's Day in May. So, you know, if you were a fan of that. But let's open the phones up for favorite corned beef sandwiches.
Can I ask a quick question here?
Yes, please.
While you're mentioning corned beef, are you going to include a Reuben sandwich with this, or strictly the corned beef?
No,
sandwich?
I think we can expand.
Also?
Is there anything better than a Reuben sandwich?
Love a Reuben sandwich.
I don't think so. How about you, Andy?
Corned beef, my go-to spot if it's not Manny's. If I'm up in the burbs visiting my folks, Max and Benny's.
Oh yeah,
oh yeah,
oh yeah. Max
does a good corned beef sandwich, and Kaufman's Deli in Skokie.
Yeah,
Dempster.
Yep.
That's how long? Boy, that place has been open forever.
Forever and a day.
Yeah, that's a good place. Schwani, favorite corned beef?
Favorite corned beef is Manny's. Mm-hmm. Also, Hackney's has a very good Reuben sandwich.
Wow. Yeah. Really?
Mm-hmm.
I would never even think of Hackney's if I was going to have
a corned beef. There was a Hackney's really in my neighborhood, not far from where I lived,
really?
At Polk and Dearborn. But certainly the the location at is it Lake Avenue, Andy?
That's Lake in Waukegan. Yeah.
Glenview?
Yep.
Yeah.
Glenview?
And then the original one on Harms Road up there.
Yeah. Famous for their that onion ring.
Onion
brick.
Rings,
brick. Which is awesome.
It's a brick.
That they put onion rings in. It's like a... It's like some kind of a mold. They cram the onion rings into this mold and then deep fry it. When it's done deep frying, they take it out, turn it upside down. It looks like a brick.
It's fantastic.
So good.
It's onion rings that look like
a
brick.
And that sauce they serve with it.
That's good stuff.
Yeah.
So I can get a corned beef sandwich and an onion brick in one place?
Yeah, about it. One other great Reuben sandwich, Miller's Pub on Wabash.
I have not been there forever. I need to get down there. And they have exceptionally good food too. I'm surprised they serve ribs there.
Yes,
baby
back known
ribs.
For the ribs.
Exceptionally delicious ribs. They never get any attention when people talk about rib places, and we've got many good ones in the Chicago area. But Miller's is one of the places that serves fantastic ribs. Want to hear my favorite Hackney story?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I was back when I was in college. I was.
Boy, that was a long time ago.
You son. Have I mentioned today how much I hate you? So, yes, it was a long time ago, as a matter of fact. So, I was an intern on a medical talk show that the University of Illinois was producing. The show was called Consultation, and they would have a doctor from the University of Illinois Medical Center on the show every week. And, you know, I was like a gopher on the show. I'd, you know, do little errands and, you know, things like that on the show. I was a college intern, so I was just learning. But we used to tape the show at this place, I think it was in Glenview, called Telemation Studios. They used to do
I remember that name.
Yeah, yeah, a lot of commercials. They did lots of television production there. Among them, this medical talk show consultation. So we go up there. I drive up there with my boss, who was also the host of the show. Jack Righeimer was his name. I drive up in his fancy car with him, and we go. We finish the taping. He goes, "You want to go to lunch? Let's go to Hackney's." So we go to Hackney's, and after lunch, at the time, I was smoking cigarettes. I was a smoker back then.
You were Mr. Cool.
I was Mr. Cool because it was so cool to smoke. So we have this fantastic lunch, and I'm having a smoke outside the restaurant, afterwards. And he goes, "Come on, let's go." So I get into his car, and I still have the cigarette. I'm not done with the cigarette yet.
Oh, wow.
So we're driving, and, you know, the car is getting all full of smoke from my cigarette. So I open the window, and I think I'm tossing my cigarette out of the window, but I toss it out, but it blew back into the car, into his back seat, and set the back seat on fire.
Oh, no.
And somehow I continued with my internship after.
Wow.
He did not fire me.
You just fired the back seat.
Yeah. So, kids.
He never took you to lunch again, though.
No, he did never. We never went to lunch again. Never let me in his car again, ever again. So, kids, don't be like Uncle Dean. Don't smoke. Just say no to cigarettes, among many other things. WGN. Favorite corned beef sandwiches. Let me see here. We have, as Andy had mentioned, Max and Benny's in Northbrook, getting some mentions on our text line. 630 said, "I just had an Irish scrambler at Dita's Cafe in Naperville. Corned beef is caramelized with, corned beef, caramelized onions, and Swiss in like a scrambler, like an omelet." Ooh, that sounds good. 847 area code, the original bagel and bialy in Buffalo Grove. Here's another that says that Miller's, they love Miller's Pub, but it's been closed because of the pandemic. We understand that they're going to be opening on April the 1st, by the way. So if you're a Miller's Pub fan, you soon will be able to be going back there again. How about you, Larry? Your favorite corned beef sandwich? Larry, are you with us?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Are you there?
Okay. I'm right here, yes.
Braverman's Corned Beef. Over on Chicago Avenue, just off of Ashland.
Braverman's.
It used to be, I don't know how many years it's been closed now, but that was two meals.
Oh, one of these gigantic corned beef sandwiches, right?
Oh, yeah. I would stop there every Tuesday on my way to the Union School. I'd just, you know, stop in there, have half a sandwich, and take the other half home with me.
Take the rest with you. Yeah, there's some great places. Somebody on our text line talking about Seaways Restaurant that used to be on 87th Street in the Pill Hill neighborhood. And I remember that as a kid. We used to go there, too. It was a fantastic Jewish deli. But talking about, you know, those sandwiches the size of your head, you know,
yes.
places in New York that also are gone, sadly, as the Stage Deli and the Carnegie Deli, they've both closed. But you could get one heck of a giant corned beef sandwich at those places. The only one that I know now, I'm sure there are many in New York, but Kaufman's Deli is another famous deli. That's where that scene from When Harry Met Sally, where,
oh, yeah,
you know, the fake orgasm scene, "I'll have what she's having." That was done at Kaufman's Deli in New York City. Larry, appreciate it. Go ahead.
I haven't found a place that has matched the Braverman's. I'm sure some of the sports guys will remember Braverman's.
I wish that I had tried it. Sounds like a good place. I have been talking endlessly about the new Tina Turner documentary called Tina, which is running on HBO and also on HBO Max. Can't recommend it enough. You'll get plenty of great Tina Turner songs in it. But mostly the story of Tina Turner's life, told by her from previously unheard interviews, lots of footage that had never been seen before. It's really a very touching look into the life of this Grammy Award-winning legend, Tina Turner. Cannot recommend that one enough for you. We're starting to get the early numbers for the weekend box office, and it looks like the new Bob Odenkirk movie, which is called Nobody, is going to wind up being the number one movie at the box office with really not a bad box office number. I mean, you know, movies that have been claiming the number one position during the pandemic have made $1 million, $2 million, you know, somewhere in that neighborhood. But the Bob Odenkirk movie, which is in theaters only, by the way, is going to be debuting as the number one movie this week, taking in $6.7 million, which, you know, still is not, you know, breaking the bank wide open, but a lot better than, you know, many other films have done this year. It's really a popcorn movie. It's a revenge action, high action thriller that is just a popcorn movie. It's nonstop violence as this sort of milquetoast guy finally snaps and goes after people who have been doing him wrong with a vengeance. You know, maybe not the best timing in the world, I will say, with all the shootings that America is dealing with right now and the issue of gun violence and violence in general. But that's what this movie is. And you know, people seem to be responding to it. Again, not a movie really with a message, not a movie with a, you know, a real moral. It's just pure popcorn movie. So, you know, there you go with that. Other movies that are available for you this week include a faith-based movie called A Week Away, which is about a young man, teenager, who reluctantly goes to a summer camp. Doesn't really want to go, but once he gets there, finds friendship and companionship, love, teenage love, and a sense of being, a sense of you know, belonging to something bigger than himself. Am also recommending that one. There is what else do we have? Yeah, those are the pretty much the big ones that are opening this week. If you have not seen some of the Academy Award nominated movies, I'm highly recommending those. I think that I've, you know, decided that Nomadland is my favorite movie of the past year. That's the Frances McDormand film that's been winning all kinds of awards, mostly for its director, Chloe Zhao, who did an amazing job putting this movie together. I'm highly recommending that one. I like Promising Young Woman with Carey Mulligan. It's also a revenge thriller, but unlike any that you've seen before. And that movie does have a very serious message to it about sexual abuse, about, you know, women who are abused and having, you know, saying enough is enough and going on a revenge spree. And there is the movie, which is called Sound of Metal, that I want to focus in on today. It's a really powerful movie that stars Riz Ahmed. Riz Ahmed has been in lots of movies before. This is probably his first big starring role, which he plays a heavy metal drummer. It's part of a band, plays a heavy metal drummer and notices that his hearing is not the same as it used to be. And as they continue to perform at extremely high decibel levels, his hearing begins to fade even more and goes, has it checked out, and learns that he is going to lose his hearing completely. So he sets off to see if there's anything that he can do about it, if there's any surgery, if there's anything that can be done about it. He checks in at a center for people who have hearing loss, for people who are new to losing their hearing, other people who are, you know, adjusting to no longer having hearing. You know, it's not exactly a rehab place, but a counseling center for people who are going through that. And he struggles with the idea that he may be losing his hearing. His one passion in life of playing music and the thought of not being able to hear music is something which is devastating to him. Riz Ahmed is amazing. And except for the fact that this is an exceptional year with performances, I'm afraid I don't think he's going to win the Academy Award, although it is an award caliber performance. Also in this movie is an actor by the name of Paul Racy. Some of you may know Paul from other projects, but he plays the counselor at this center. He is someone who is also deals with hearing loss and counsels the other young people at the center about what their new life is going to be with American Sign Language, with obstacles which, you know, may be in their way and how to overcome these obstacles. That's really what this movie is about. And Paul Racy's performance in this film is nothing short of amazing. It's so beautiful and so touching. Paul Racy is a Chicagoan. He is dyed in the wool South Side. He graduated from Richards High School in Oak Lawn. No relation. But he's a big White Sox fan, as we found out when we did a Zoom call with him a little bit earlier this week.
That's such a familiar sound to me, WGN. I grew up on Jack Brickhouse and WGN. And Jack Brickhouse was like a god to me. He was so into the game. When he said, hey, hey, that was for real.
Yeah.
He was a fan, you know.
Yeah, you would rush home to watch Brickhouse with...
Had to.
You know, whatever was whatever happened to be going on. So where were you growing up then? What part of the Chicago area are you from?
Humboldt Park. I was an altar boy at St. Mark's Church there in Humboldt Park. In eighth grade, my mom and dad, we moved to Oak Lawn. So I went to Blue Island High School. And then my senior year was Harold L. Richards. They built a brand new high school there in Oak Lawn. I graduated from there.
Yep.
So we were more like Southsiders, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But my brothers are Cub fans, but because of the 59 White Sox, I will never forget when they won the pennant. That's something you don't forget.
When they blew off the air raid sirens, remember
yes.
that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I forget the name of the fire commissioner who blew off the air raid sirens. And, you know, Mayor Daley, the old Mayor Daley,
wasn't
so happy about it. I grew up at 109th and Artesian.
Okay.
And I just went to my niece and nephew, twins, high school graduation at Richards High School in Oak Lawn. So I was out there recently.
I'm the first graduating class, 1966.
How about that? How about that?
Yeah.
And look at you now, my friend, Oscar nominee. Well, congratulations.
Thank you, man.
I can't even tell you how happy I was when they made the announcements that morning and your name came up. I was not a bit surprised because you were so amazing in Sound of Metal, but... You know, just from a Chicago point of view, Southsider to Southsider point of view, just so happy for you.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate that very much. It's been a long road. But I've just been taking it a day at a time, trying to do what I have to do to pay for my house here in Burbank. And never really thought I'd ever hit this thing. I'm very, very fortunate, very, very grateful. I was happy just to be a theater actor, you know?
Yeah. What was that morning like for you when the announcement? Did you get up early or, you know?
No, I overslept.
Attaboy.
I usually have a brain clock. I don't have an alarm clock. And all of a sudden I look and it's 5:25. I go nuts. Me and my wife, we jump out of bed, run in the living room. I turned on the TV. And just as the picture came up, they were just announcing the second nominee. And then my name came up. Honestly, it's surreal. You don't believe it because if you follow the hype on Twitter and on social media, Paul's down, he's up, he's down, he's up, he's down, he's out. Yeah. And so, no, it's hard to believe. I'm still in the clouds over it.
Yeah. I think so worthy. I remember when we talked when the movie first came out and, you know, sort of tongue-in-cheek asked you if you start thinking about your Oscar speech yet, because I thought your performance and you know, Reza's performance in this movie are just so stunning, just absolutely stunning, and so deserving. What do you think is the power of this movie? I mean, it's gotten so much buzz during this bizarre award season this year.
Well, just the fact that it shows deaf culture in a different light. You know, growing up in the 50s, if I would introduce my parents to a hearing person, there was always this feeling of they're not really there. I don't even want to approach this idea of going deaf or somebody that is deaf or blind. I think people have this, they're afraid they're going to catch it or something. This just shows that deaf people are very, very accessible. They're joyous. They can do anything anybody else can do except for one thing. They can't hear, you know, so that's easily solved. So I think the movie shows them in a different light, that they are just like us, these deaf people, that they have pluses and minuses, foibles, just like you and I. That's why I'm hoping to see more protagonists in movies and television that are people with disabilities or deaf actors going through a cathartic experience that you can actually, a journey that you can identify with, even though they're not all white or they're all able-bodied. This world is much more complex than just that. Yeah. So I think it's going to open up a little doors, get a little breathing room for people.
Right.
To get some opportunities here.
Do you think also part of it, it's so relatable because Reza's character goes from somebody who has hearing to somebody who loses his hearing. So he's going through that transition of not only being accepted by others, but accepting this new way of life for himself.
Right.
In this movie. And you're really sort of his guide through all of this in the movie of helping him to learn the new way that he's going to be living and to, you know, learn to accept himself, that he can do everything except hear.
Right. Yes. And Joe's philosophy being his guide, that's one philosophy within the deaf community. There are other deaf people in the community that don't like the idea of cochlear implants. I'm whole. I'm perfect and complete just as I am. Don't touch me. That's how my father was. Years ago, when my dad was still alive, we were in Chicago, they had a presentation of this new invention called the cochlear implant. And I was sitting there with my dad, and I said, "Dad, you want one of those?" He goes, no, I'm happy the way I am. Hmm. My mother, though, who lost her hearing at the age of 5, was intrigued. So it's a personal journey for everybody, isn't it? Everybody can make their own decisions.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of controversy about it, and it is a personal choice. But Joe, being an alcoholic, dives in all the way into this community after he loses his family, just drinking beer all the time. And he decides to jump in like a lot of addicts do. And he just adapts to that philosophy of, I'm fine the way I am. And that's what he tries to save Ruben from, the experience of being disappointed. And that's you see that disappointment in the last scene of, I tried to help you, but it's your decision. And he does support his decision.
Yeah, and that's really the point. It's about individual decisions. It's such a good movie in so many ways. Mm. I read after the nomination came out that you were talking and crediting your experience on the Chicago theater scene for where you are today. Talk to me a little about that.
Well, I was in a theater company called the Immediate Theater with 10 other actors. We tried to get a theater company that would rival Steppenwolf. And we had all read a book called The Empty Space by Albert Brooks. He talks about doing theater that burns in your mind, something that sears something across your mind that you can't forget. That's how deaf people describe it. It's like, and when they talk about sound and metal, they go, it sears your heart and your mind, you know? So we wanted to do that kind of theater. And so we got together and we did Children of a Lesser God. We did Crimes of the Heart. We did so many things there with the great Jane Brody, a great acting teacher in Chicago. Jane Brody, she's still there. And she made me feel like I could do anything. That's the kind of teacher she was and is. So that's we tried to do theater that was like that was going to be truthful, honest, authentic, and no BS. And so that's why, you know, they talk about if you can do that kind of theater in a 99-seat house, in a black box theater, and make those 99 people in that theater feel something that they forget where they are, that is magic. Can you imagine when the Greeks did it way back then, when, and that's what they were known for, having a didactic experience. God, that was what I wanted so badly. And many, 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 many nights of my acting career I've been part of that. Even out here in Deaf West Theater, we did American Buffalo, a great Mamet play, and Of Mice and Men, Steinbeck. And God, I guarantee you, the audiences that have seen that kind of work that I've done here know what I'm talking about. Although the casting directors out here, they probably never came and saw me, so they don't know what I'm talking about. But I'm telling you, one thing I do know is theater, 100%. And that is what is easily transferable to a film. People that come out here to be a star because they look so good or whatever that is, they couldn't hold a candle to any theater actors, because that's a job. That's a hard job.
Yeah, there's a big difference between being a star and being an actor.
It's a craft.
Yeah,
a craft.
I can tell you as a critic who has, you know, sat through so many plays, the junk that you have to sit through it's worth it for the few times that you see something and it stays with you for a few days. You cannot stop thinking about what you saw on stage, because it got into your skin, it got into your soul, and touched you. That's what great theater is to me.
Yeah, it's kind of rare, unfortunately. Not everybody can be an actor, but that is rare.
And not everybody can be an Academy Award nominee.
Oh my God.
Either. How about that? How about that?
Yeah, how about that?
That's fantastic. Now, when you go up on stage to accept your Oscar, I want you to wear that White Sox jacket that you're wearing. Are you wearing the jersey, too? Am I seeing a look at you?
Oh, yeah.
Look at you. You are full tilt Southside here with me.
Dude, I have a couple more Chicago interviews coming up. So I have a whole wardrobe for you guys, man. I'm going to represent my White Sox. I'm telling you. WGN.